Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, May 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org if you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 16-plus years to improve the quality of my life and my relationships, to manage my emotions, and effectively turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. If you go to that page and download that chapter and read it, you can also go to that same web page and click on a link and get immediate access to a PDF file that contains that worksheet process itself, absolutely free. Print it off and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the application of that tool and others that Michael and Jeannie make available have improved their life. Or we've talked at length about some of the principles that underlie the power of these tools. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because that usually provides stimulus for questions, and we'd be happy to entertain those questions. In our current format, we're here 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce it by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year, and this is the 140th day of the year, and the Course in Miracles lesson from the workbook today says, only salvation can be said to cure. The commentary reads, the word cure, in quotes, is a word that cannot be applied to any remedy that the world accepts as beneficial. What the world perceives as therapeutic is but what will make the body, quote, better, close quotes. When it tries to heal the mind, it sees no separation from the body where it thinks the mind exists. Its forms of healing must substitute one illusion for another illusion. One belief in sickness takes another form of belief in sickness, and so the patient now perceives himself as well. He is not healed. He merely had a dream that he was sick, and in the dream he found a magic formula to make him well. Yet he has not awakened from the dream, and so his mind remains exactly as it was before. He has not seen the light that would awaken him and end the dream. What difference does the content of a dream make in reality? One either sleeps or awakens. There is nothing in between. The happy dreams the Holy Spirit brings are different from the dreaming of the world, where one can merely dream he is awake. The dreams forgiveness lets the mind perceive do not induce another form of sleep, so the dreamer dreams another dream. His happy dreams are heralds of the dawn of truth upon the mind. They lead from sleep to gentle waking, so that dreams are gone, and thus they cure for all eternity. Atonement heals with certainty and cures all sickness. For the mind which understands that sickness can be nothing but a dream is not deceived by forms the dream may take. Sickness, where guilt is absent, cannot come, for it is but another form of guilt. Atonement does not heal the sick, for that is not a cure. It takes away the guilt that makes the sickness possible. And that is cure indeed, for sickness now is gone and nothing left to which it can return. So as we read commentaries like this, we have to understand that each of us is going to carry sometimes radically different meanings for a word like atonement. And, you know, we were talking about this probably just yesterday with somebody, that the word atonement has been for some people, it has a meaning of being punished. You have to atone for your sins. You have to do penance. You have to be punished. You have to be corrected in some kind of a physical punishment way. And we want to understand here that the use of the word atonement has nothing to do with that. It's a correction in a very, very gentle form of correction, which is a redirection, which is awaking from a sleeping state into true perception. It has nothing to do with judgment of sin and then a need to be punished to absolve your sins. So the commentary goes on, "Peace be to you who have been cured in God, in the creation, and not in idle dreams, for cure must come from wholeness, holiness, and wholeness or holiness cannot be found where sin or errors in thought are cherished. The Creator abides in holy temples. He is barred where sin has entered." So if I have an error in thought, which is one of the better ways to think about sin in this word sin in this kind of writing, if I have an error in thought, if I'm living in a false perception, an illusion of separation, then awareness of the truth of creation is not possible. That's what I take to mean when it says God abides in holy temples and God is barred from entering where sin has entered. It's just about what we do with our minds that distorts or prevents us from perceiving accurately. So, you know, the truth is there is no place where the creation is not. And therefore, sin or errors in thought can have no home in which to hide from his beneficence. There is no place where wholeness or holiness is not, and nowhere sin and sickness can abide. So in truth, when we see the truth, that's the real cure. That's the real waking. This is the thought that cures. It does not make distinctions among realities, nor does it seek to heal what is not sick, unmindful where need for healing is. This is no magic. And again, in the Course in Miracles, magic is defined as something other than what's real. Believing that a pill is going to cure me, that's magic. Believing that somebody else outside of me is going to cure me, that's magical thinking. Believing that I have sinned and my creator is judging me and is going to send me to hell, that's magical thinking. The truth merely focuses on what is, and it knows that no illusion can be real. Let us not try today to seek to cure what cannot suffer sickness. Healing must be sought but where it is, and then applied to what is sick, so that it can be cured. There is no remedy the world provides that can effect a change in anything. The mind that brings illusions to the truth is really changed. There is no change but this. For how can one illusion differ from another but in the attributes that have no substance, no reality, no core, and nothing that is truly different? So this lesson is pointing us to the fact that when we see our true nature, when we see without the distortions of the negative emotions that distort our perceptions, that is what brings about what we call true healing. Because we see that there was never any fault, blame, or sickness to begin with. There was never any separation from the source of creation. Today we seek to change our minds about the source of sickness, for we seek a cure for all illusions. We do not seek another shift from one illusion to another. We seek a cure for all illusions. We will try today to find the source of healing, which is in our minds because the Creator placed it there for us. It is not farther from us than ourselves. It is as near to us as our own thoughts. So close it is, impossible to lose. We need but seek it, and it must be found. When we look where it is, we cannot help but find it. Of course, there's that old story about the man who's looking for his car keys underneath the street light, and somebody comes by and says, what's going on? He says, I lost my car keys. And he says, I'll help you look. And after about 10 minutes of looking, the second person says, so where exactly were you? What were you doing the last time you remember having your keys? And he says, I was down there, down the block in that alley. He says, why are you looking over here? Well, because the light's better. That's what we've done with illusions. We chase illusions to make us feel better because it's easier. It's what we're trained to do. The light's better over here. But that has nothing to do with finding a true solution. And if we go look where we dropped the keys, we are certain to find them. The commentary continues, we will not be misled today by what appears to us as sick. We go beyond appearances today and reach the source of healing from which nothing is exempt. We will succeed to the extent to which we realize that there can never be a meaningful distinction made between what is untrue and equally untrue. Here there are no degrees and no beliefs that what does not exist is truer in some forms than others. All of them are false, and all can be cured because they are not true. So, this is how we proceed. We lay down our amulets and our charms and our medicines and our chants and our bits of magic in whatever form they take. We will be still and listen for the voice of healing. We will cure all ills as one, restoring sameness to the Son of creation. No voice but this can cure. Today we hear a single voice which speaks to us of truth, where all illusions end and peace returns to the eternal quiet home of God. We waken hearing him and we let him speak to us 5 minutes as the day begins and end the day by listening again 5 minutes more before we sleep. Our only preparation is to let our interfering thoughts be laid aside, not separately, but all of them as one. They are the same. We have no need to make them different and thus delay the time when we can hear the Creator speak to us. We hear the creation now. We come to the creation today with nothing in our hands to which we cling. With lifted hearts and listening minds, we say, only salvation can be said to cure. Speak to us, creation, that we may be healed. And we will feel salvation cover us with a soft protection and keep peace so deep that no illusion can disturb our minds nor offer proof to us that it is real. This we will learn today, and we will say our prayer for healing hourly and take a minute as the hour strikes to hear the answer to our prayer be given to us as we attend in silence and in joy. This is the day when healing comes to us. This is the day when separation ends, and we remember who we really are. Today's lesson, simply put, is only salvation can be said to cure. Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 140, is titled Plastering Over Truth. She quotes Benjamin Franklin, "There are three things extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself." Pam writes, "Inscribed on the entry of the oracle at Delphi are the words, 'Know thyself.' According to legend, the seven sages of ancient Greece left this wise maxim at the temple of Apollo as a foundation for Western civilization. Never mind that they've been co-opted by everyone from Plato and Socrates to the Matrix movies and Miss Cracker on the 10th season of RuPaul's Drag Race. But what does it really mean? According to Lesson 140, only salvation can be said to cure. To really know thyself is to go deep, beyond the chatter of my mind, beyond the thoughts that run like warnings at the bottom of a pharmaceutical ad. To know myself is to fully get the truth of who I am. Invincible consciousness. I'm either awake or asleep. There is nothing in between. Although the ego tells me that that's a line of BS, belief system, I refuse to listen. No longer do I judge by size, seeming, gravity, or anything related to form. Today I will lay all interfering thoughts aside. I affirm that nothing can hurt me. Nothing can affect my invincibility. That's what it means to know thyself. Today's lesson, only salvation can be said to cure. So, that's the Course in Miracles workbook, Lesson 140. That's our Pam Grout's commentary on that. And we have 40 minutes left to talk, to say hello to Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
So, this thanks, this lesson, I love it, but there's so much I don't understand. But I want to start with something you said yesterday. I couldn't call in, but you said something about how If you set up camp in a place, clear the area, then leave for 2 weeks, you'll come back and it's all overgrown. This is like our thoughts, our habitual thoughts. And I was doing a worksheet with Tim Bingham yesterday, and he said, you know, I have the same thoughts over and over. And I told him your little story. And he said, that's very discouraging. And I said, yeah, I suppose so, but it's a fact. And now we've shined a light on it. And we have to practice this mental hygiene, as Dr. Tim called it. I think that's what you called it. So all the rest of the day, I've been watching. It's not even a set of thoughts. It's like a subliminal, nonverbal belief system about life. And I could list them all, but they're the grim things that most of us have, like life's hard and then you die sort of thing. But a lot of stuff in between, lots of bright spots. But if you sped it all up, you'd see that it's full of bumps and lumps, and then you get compromised and you get worse, or you die suddenly, or you die. Anyway, a lot of grim stuff interspersed with moments of relief and great pleasure that could be more consistent and more pervasive if we really did this lesson. And I'm so glad you defined atonement. I also need a definition for salvation. Those are huge red flag religious buzzword. As soon as I hear it, I put them in the trash practically. They don't mean anything in themselves except a lot of things that are parts of old belief systems that are not too healthy. So my first question is, how would you define salvation, for instance? Is it the same as just knowing you're saved
right.
forever?
Yes, right. It's all the whole idea is that there is no need for salvation except from waking to the false nature of your beliefs about yourself. So the biggest thing for most people is, as you're pointing out, is the undoing of the conditioning of the culture or the religion that says you're bad, you're wrong, you're damaged, you're broken, you're unlovable, and you need to pay up for all of your mistakes. You need to be punished, or you need to get some magical intermediary to help square the books between you and your creator.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be undone. That's all just a fantasy, because
mm-hmm.
it all comes from the original dream that we're separate.
Yeah.
You know, there's the so many different lovely ways to talk about it. But if you imagine, and they were talking about it here, so if you have a dream and you dream that you're sick, and then in the dream you dream that somebody gives you a pill and you're cured, that's what, you know, does that really make a difference in your life when you wake up? No, because
right.
you weren't sick to begin with. You had a dream that you were sick, and then you had this in the dream, or in that dream that where you're dreaming that you have that illness, then you dream up a cure. That's what these deeper teachings are calling us to, is the realization that at an absolute level, this is the truth of us.
Mm-hmm.
And if and when we're able to see that truth fully and clearly, and see through the nature of the deceitful mind and the false perception, then its effects fall away. There's a line in the Course mm-hmm. in Miracles that says, we need only return to the origin of the error in thought and see it in order for all the negative effects of that error in thought to be dismantled. Just think about that.
Mm.
If I am in this dream, if I'm having a night terror and I'm a child and my parent is coming and trying to wake me up, and I'm stuck in the night terror, And my parent is standing outside of me in this nice house, climate-controlled, soft bed, you know, loving family environment. And my parent is trying to get me to wake up and see everything is safe. But I am stuck in the night terror.
Mm-hmm.
That's us as human beings who live according to the perception of our senses and think we're separate and think that our true nature is the physical body. That's us.
You know, Pam Grout said something at the end of her thing, something about knowing thyself means knowing your conscious. Could you read that last thing? It was, I wanted to ask you about that, and it's connected with what you're talking about.
She says, nothing can affect my invincibility. That's what it means to know thyself. That was the last two sentences.
Oh, the
she says,
okay.
She says a little earlier, she says, to know myself is to fully get the truth of who I am. Invincible consciousness.
There you go.
I'm either awake or asleep.
You know, I've always thought that my worst fear is to lose consciousness for all eternity and never know consciousness again. That is my bottom line, most terrible fear and thought. And when you say, as the Course says, we are not separate, suddenly we're knitted together with all of consciousness for all time, for all eternity. And so the idea of not being separate and of having invincible eternal consciousness are connected. And I've never made that connection before. And I don't know quite what to do with it. It's like a thought and I haven't metabolized it yet. But I love the thought and I'd like to have it go somewhere.
it doesn't need to go anywhere because it's a false thought to begin with. And when you say we're suddenly knitted together, that's a false thought. The actuality is there is only the one. There is the flow of energy. There is the flow of consciousness. Your consciousness, my consciousness, you know, Way of Mastery says it over and over again. All minds are joined. It's, you are not separate from your neighbor. You're not separate from any other consciousness or entity. You're living in the dream that you're separate, but that's a dream.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying as long as you're in a night terror.
Mm-hmm.
But after you awaken from the night terror, fully awaken, you don't keep living in the terror.
Right. Well, this is coming at it from another angle. I had a friend who was mentally ill, and she got cancer. And as she got sicker, her mind got well. To the point when she died, she was mentally fine. And that's one story that I don't know what to do with. Another one is two people that I admire very much. One was he wasn't a teacher because he had died before we were born, but Tim and I studied Vedanta, the Hindu scriptures. We didn't become Hindu, but we studied the ancient Hindu scriptures. And the teacher, his name was Ramakrishna, and he lived 1836-ish. When he was 50-something, he got throat cancer. Here was an enlightened man who got throat cancer and died in his 50s. And then there's Byron Katie, whose eyesight is going, and yet she's enlightened. So I'm just messing around in my mind with what does it mean when the truth of illness is a defense against the truth doesn't appear to be being lived out by people we think of as enlightened or knowing much more than I do. Do you have any thoughts about that sort of thing?
Dozens, dozens, but we've only got 29 minutes left, so.
Okay, give it a shot.
So, you know, I was saying this to somebody. I was doing some emotional energy work with somebody yesterday, and this is a person who is just so dedicated to living a good life and has tried, you know, all kinds of things, energy medicine, medical medicine, quantum neurology, et cetera. But she's got some physical, you know, aches and pains and symptoms that have been around a long time. And so at one point I found myself talking to her yesterday about how nearly every great spiritual teacher that I ever remember reading about, like Meher Baba. Do you know about Meher Baba?
No, but I heard the name.
Well, you know, some people say he was, you know, not just the next coming, he was above that. He was, you know, the God consciousness in physical form, et cetera. And just really, really enlightened stuff. And there had been some car accidents, and his physical body was racked with these discomforts and pains. And there's Krishnamurti, who, you know, it's hard to find writing and conversations, transcripts of his conversations, where people come in and ask him these really difficult questions. And he's just rock solid. He's right on it. He doesn't get flustered. He's speaking from the spirit, whatever you want to say. He's channeling this good stuff. And his body was failing as he got older and older, and his voice was shaky, and his, you know, looked like he could barely walk. And they're just physical energy systems, right? It's like at the ultimate level, yes. At some ultimate level, theoretically, and of course if you read Autobiography of a Yogi with Paramahansa Yogananda, you'll hear about some of his mentors who could, you know, bilocate and materialize a body and send a message to somebody halfway across the world, etc. And yet they dropped the body. They got ill and the body fell apart or whatever. The consciousness didn't. I mean, after that, if they reach a certain level of consciousness, they can have this level of volition about returning or communicating with people, et cetera, which is the nature of these, the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery and Seth Speaks and the Abraham teachings. You know, it's essentially a demonstration to us that there's more going on here than just the physical body. So when you ask questions like that, I just want to redirect you to, okay, wait a minute. If we had the absolute answer, what concrete change would you make in your life based on that? Because I don't have the absolute answer, but if we can get you to start talking about, okay, so, you know, if I knew this for sure, then this is what I'd be doing differently this afternoon or tomorrow. What is that thing that you would be doing differently? And let's take a look at whether or not that can happen, even if you don't know the answer, and whether or not that would be a good thing to pursue, whether you knew the answer or not.
Okay, right? You're
so
on it.
Getting into these philosophical debates about this and saying, well, wait, if this is really true, then why did this person die? And why is this person having, because, you know, I know this great spiritual teacher, and she is just so full of love, and she's so unflappable, and she just gives away rings and houses and things. We're talking about, you know, Byron Katie. But she still has physical ailments. How come? Well, what good is the answer to that question going to do for me in my inner process today? To bring me closer to peace and calm and the experience of eternity in this moment. And if you can answer that question, then maybe we can help you with an answer.
Well, all right. We talk about guilt. It says in the lesson somewhere that guilt if we got rid of guilt, we wouldn't. Let me turn it around. If I have a wart, or in my case, I have tinnitus, which is not a big deal compared to so many things, sounds as if the lesson is inviting me to be, to acknowledge that I have guilt in there, and that's the reason I have ear ringing. So maybe I'm thinking Byron Katie has something she's guilty about, or
okay, look,
no, I'm
look
just,
right here. When you say that the lesson is inviting you to think that because you have guilt, that's why you have tinnitus. This lesson, to my eye and ear, is going to several meta levels beyond that and saying, look, this whole dream of being in a body and being the body is what there's guilt about. At a whole different level. It's not that I have guilt because I stole a candy bar from my brother when I was, you know, 6 years old and we were out trick-or-treating. It's not that I have guilt because I, you know, played Peeping Tom as a teenager. It's not that I have guilt because X, Y, and Z things that happened. This kind of a teaching, the Way of Mastery, the Course in Miracles, this kind of teaching is talking about meta levels to the individual personal guilt stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the fact that we're all here manifesting in physical bodies means we're all just plain old guilty.
It means that we've been trained into guilt. Right? Our cultures and our families, our language has trained us into this process of guilt. And, you know, one of the better definitions that I, one of the more useful definitions I have for guilt is, it's a constellation of negative thoughts about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not a single thought. And we've talked about this before. If I'm going to be doing a reality management worksheet and I want to put guilt as the emotion, that's okay. I can do that. But I get more out of the worksheets when I use guilt as the thought.
Yeah.
And I say, oh, I'm guilty. I caused this or that. Okay, when I have that thought that I'm guilty or my actions caused this or that, what's the emotion? Well, sometimes I have sadness that I feel like I caused pain or upset to somebody that I care about. And sometimes I have anger at myself, or sometimes I have anger at the circumstances that I think manipulated me or pushed me into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I get more out of it when I think about guilt as this constellation of negative thoughts about myself. So I'm trying to get you out of the let's figure this out with your conscious logical mind and step into the meta perspective that says, you know, in the lesson, in the commentary in the lesson, in the first paragraph it says, cure is a word that cannot be applied to any remedy that the world accepts as beneficial.
Yeah.
Right? Because what the world perceives as therapeutic is what will make the body, quote, better, close quotes. And when it tries to heal the mind, it sees no separation between the mind and body because it thinks the mind exists inside the body.
Yeah.
And so it just substitutes one illusion for another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's all built on false premise. It's all built on distortion and illusion. And so if you think you are your body, and then you think in your spiritual teachings that your physical ailments are just a reflection of a negative thought, and you better get in there and change that thought. And if you don't, well, then you're not very spiritual. Look at the trap. Look at
mm-hmm.
the vicious cycle.
Oh. Yeah.
Right? And look at the teachers who have had cancer, who have, you know, eye dysfunctions that turn to blindness, and that have, like, the aches and pains that come from having a serious car accident, but they stay loving and calm and focused and in this higher flow. And they don't let the aches and pains of the body distract them from that inner peace. That, to me, is far more valuable than tracking down, well, why do I have this sore ankle? Why do I have fill-in-the-blank symptom? And what do I need to do to become more enlightened so the physical body doesn't have this discomfort? Well, I think, you know, that's propitiation. That's trying to do the right thing for the wrong reason. If I'm trying to get inner peace so that my elbow doesn't hurt, I'm chasing after something that isn't real. If I just remove the garbage that blocks me from realizing my true nature as this invincible consciousness, you liked that phrase, then I'm on the right path. I'm just there, as Krishnamurti would say, to question everything and to see the false as the false and to see the false when it parades around as the truth. And as Gangaji would say, if I do that long enough, if I sit and I watch all of this stuff that comes and goes, and everything that comes and goes is not the real me. It's not the essence of creation. It's just this flow. If I stay there observing it and questioning it long enough, eventually I'll see what never comes and goes. I'll see the truth, the bedrock core truth of all life, and my existence is the consciousness that allows me to have any awareness of anything at all. And that is pure, and that will fill me with light. That will fill me with appreciation for its presence and my presence in it.
And that is the happy dream. That's as close as we can get, right? When we're in that, making that decision, bypassing irritability or negative projections and stuff, if we come aware of them, we just make the decision to do a bypass into, if we bypass, are we in the happy dream?
Yeah, I think you lost me. If we do the bypass, are we in the happy dream? What does that mean?
Well, I'm just aware that so much of my thinking is conditioned, is cultural, it's this, that, and the other, it's habits, ruts. But if I can decide, I'm getting it more and more, why the Course in Miracles says, 1 minute out of every hour, do this. I mean, I just thought that was a pain, and it is, but it's necessary, that sort of thing.
Well, listen, if it's such a pain, let's take a look at what is it distracting you from?
You know, getting something done, practicing the piano or... No. Sorry, Dr. Tim, but I mean, you're hauling me out of the mire here. I'm still way in there.
Yeah, but it's a good thing to get hauled out once in a while, right? To get
right
up from the bottom of the pit and see that there's more to life than just that pit. And I feel like that frog at the bottom of the well from the story from Pierre Pradervan, right? When I'm at the bottom of the well, and that's all I've ever known, it's impossible for me to imagine the ocean and the sky above
right
it. But every once in a while, it's good to get a peek at that and realize, wait, there's more going on here than just this rat's nest of traps of thoughts and negativity and striving and, you know, what seriously speaking, what is it that I'm going to do in those 5 minutes an hour or 1 minute every hour that's going to benefit my life more than learning to question my false beliefs that keep me trapped in basically in emotional hell. What is it I'm possibly mm-hmm. going to do with that time that's going to be more beneficial than that?
Right. My first thought, of course, is that I'm going to fidget and keep looking at the clock, but that's not what you're talking about. You're actually talking about examining them, watching them, just being aware of them, allowing them, and for a minute every hour doing that, which is a really onerous assignment, but necessary. I understand that
but
it's necessary.
Listen, to who or what is it onerous?
Me.
Who? What?
My. Right. My stubborn, I'm right, ego self, separated self.
I think you're beginning to go down the path when you say that, but examine that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Examine that with a little bit more honesty and earnestness. What me wants to fight tooth and nail against giving 1 minute at the beginning of every hour, or 5 minutes an hour, or 15 minutes twice a day?
The scaredy cat.
Okay, scared of what?
Me.
Scared of what?
Scared I'm wasting my time, because if I do that, I won't get done and I won't be safe.
Okay.
I'll lose out.
Those are statements. Those are statements to write down and explore. The scaredy cat me, the scared I'm going to lose out, the scared that I'm scared, because the more you go into that, the more you're going to reveal. And yours will be different than everybody else's in some slight shade or flavor. What are you afraid is going to happen if you make the commitment to something that might actually lead you to a revolutionary change in your experience of life?
Okay, there's a big chunk of I don't believe it's going to do that if I do that. So I've got to look at that too. I don't think it's going to work.
Okay,
my
well then
cat
it won't,
be
of course.
Yeah.
But you know then that, of course, it won't work, right? There's the Henry Ford thing about how if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right, either way,
mm-hmm.
because it's
mm-hmm.
your belief that's going to drive your experience. It's your belief that's going to drive you to, you know, either set and achieve goals or block yourself from achieving those goals, taking actions.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't get into that argument, because you can't know until you do it, but if you don't go into that argument right away, if you go back to questioning those statements you made earlier, what is it you're afraid? Who is it? What part of you, what sense of identity in you is afraid? And again, that's your word that you're afraid, scaredy cat. I'm not saying that everybody's afraid to do this. We're saying that's
right.
What came up in you was fear. What would happen if you devoted yourself to these exercises? And, you know, we're talking about minimum effort. Literally, minimum effort. Well, but we are in actuality. And there's a part of your mind that's turning it into some onerous, you know, enormous task. This is not like acquiring a doctorate. Right. This is not like learning the skills for a new job where you have to work a laser that machines metal to high tolerances. This is just 5 minutes here and there, 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening. I mean, people spend far more than that staring at their phones religiously. So we're saying it's so important to question who in Susan Bingham, in who she thinks she is, who thinks that's such a horrible, hard task? And then when we ask that, who is afraid? And then what is she afraid of? These are powerful questions for you to truly explore how you're locked in the dream. You are literally the child. And I had a child who had night terrors. And you were the child in a night terror. And your loving parent is trying to awaken you. And when you awake, you're going to find yourself in this lovely bedroom. It's been decorated just for you. It's a warm, soft bed. It's a climate-controlled house with loving parents. And you are kicking and screaming to stay in the dream, in the night terror. And when you understand, when you let yourself explore, wow, what is it in me that says this is so hard? Or what I'm going to be giving up in those 5 minutes that I would be spending doing this exercise is so much more important than exploring whether or not this exercise could be of benefit. When you uncover that, movement will happen.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, and it's a tremendous challenge, but I'm going to argue with you again. One of them is, Pam Grout says, what are all these words and what's all this stuff? And she separates out the requirement into a separate little exercise box so that you can decide to do it or not. And I loved that because I thought, I can learn these things without doing to the letter what this rigid requirement is requiring me. I can get the benefit by doing work in a way I feel is possible rather than following this thing to the letter, which is sort of like being in church and having to say all the things you have to say one after another. The recitations have got a big association with a huge cosmic school marm, I guess.
Okay. So let me agree with you 100%. Can you let that in?
Yeah, that seems very
nice. I agree. We've talked about this before. I agree with you 100%. Way of Mastery says the same thing. Here, we're going to get to the Way of Transformation. It's the second book in the three-book series. I recommend you get a notebook. I recommend you get a special pen. I recommend you get a special place for your pen and your notebook that's very, that you have reverence for. And then every time we give you an exercise, do the exercise and make notes. Or don't do the exercise and just take 100% responsibility for your decision to not do it. It's fine either way. What we're talking about here is not whether or not you need to do these exercises as they're laid out in order to get the benefit. What we're talking about here is the resistance in you that goes to seeing it as this horribly onerous task and or generates fear. That's all we're talking about. We're not saying, in order to be saved, we'll come back to the salvation word, right? In order to reach the atonement, you must do what Course in Miracles says. We're not saying that at all. Here's this exercise for today in the workbook lessons. You must do this. We're not saying if you don't do this, you can't have atonement, that you aren't whole. We're saying you're already whole. You're already whole and complete. Nothing of value can be added unto you. Nothing of value can be taken from you. Notice what happens in your mind when you think someone is telling you, like the cosmic school marm, you're bad, you're wrong because you don't do this. That's only coming from inside you. And when you generate fear or you generate the belief that this is such an enormous task and this is such a burden to be asked to do this, that's your creation. And all this course truly is asking us to do is wake up to that dream. Mm-hmm. Wake up to that false belief that this is such a hard thing. drop the illusion that this is so hard.
Okay. That's good.
And when you try to drop the illusion and fear comes up, explore that. How are you creating the fear? And when you try and drop the illusion and the belief comes up, oh, my God, this is such a hard thing to do, explore how you're creating that experience of this 1 minute at the beginning of every hour or 5 minutes in the morning, how you're creating an experience of that being so difficult. Because the actuality is you have done things that are far more difficult. You've raised children, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah. Lots of things were harder, but I didn't have to stop every hour, stop everything. And
okay. Right there, it just came up again. Did you see it? The resistance belief came up. And so it's there.
I know.
It's there to be explored, right? And
yeah.
We already said, you don't have to stop every hour. You know, you're far more enlightened. I have news for you right now. I'll tell you this absolute truth. I know this as much as I know I only have two hands, one on the end of each of my wrists. I know that you, Susan Bingham, are far more along the path and enlightened than many people who have done every exercise in the workbook for the Course in Miracles every time they were asked to do it more than once.
Wow.
I know that to be true.
Oh, that's good news.
It's just the truth of life. If you're doing it mechanically, and believe me, there have been people who've done it mechanically for years. I remember with great fondness when Dale Ellen Hoffman came to visit in Woodstock, Illinois. We had him here for the Tuesday support group. And he came to visit and he said, and most of it was the delight that I took by watching how animated he was. When he talked about people, mm-hmm. he knows that study the Course in Miracles and use it as a weapon against people.
Oh, right. Religion, that happens all the time with religion. That's true.
But with every spiritual teaching, right? So if you make it a
yeah.
ritual and if you make it a mandatory thing for you're creating a structure and a set of beliefs around it and a set of emotional responses, and all we're being called to do here is wake up and see that all of that is illusion. All of that is based in the dream of separation and in fear. And none of it affects your true nature. You're whole and complete already. You do not need to complete A Course in Miracles to wake up. It's just one of the many tools that are available. And yet, as a tool, if I pick it up and apply it, and I notice a resistance in me or a sadness or an anger or a grief or rage, it's there for me to understand it, to explore it, to integrate it, to heal it. It's not there as a punishment.
Mm-hmm. So I know it's the end of the hour, but when you talk about true thoughts or being in the happy dream, you're actually choosing love pretty much. That's it. In every situation, you may be aware of a critical feeling or an irritation or something, but if you choose the loving thing, that's the happy dream. Those are the healing thoughts. Are they all connected like that?
Okay. that's a good approach. Go try that.
Okay.
You will only know when you step out on that stone, that stepping stone that seems to be hovering 3 feet away from the edge of the cliff, and there are some lines that seem to go from that into this fog bank, 1,000 feet over the bottom of the crevice, but yeah, you'll only know when you step out onto it, is it true or not.
Okay.
So rather than get all caught up in that, just take a breath, scan your body, notice how you feel. If you're feeling that connection, if you're getting the intuition, that calm knowing, then pursue it. If not, choose again.
Okay. I will.
Well, blessing. Thank you so much for the call and the time, and look forward to our next time to contact.
Thanks, Dr. Tim. Really good.
I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it. Good discussion. I came in about 20 minutes ago. So enjoyed that.
All right. Well, have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, May the 20th, 2021. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. I'm not sure where Michael's at. I was just reading.
Michael, if you can hear me.
Maybe. Oh, there you are.
Go for it.
Lisa says in the chat room she doesn't know or can't remember exactly where she heard this. Susan has talked about tendonitis, ringing in the ears, and I have that too. But Lisa says she heard that is actually the Holy Spirit trying to talk to you, and you might be blocking it. So thank you, Lisa. I'll listen to those words as well. And Susan's still on, so I'm sure she heard it as well too. Now, welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. It certainly is a form of communication indicating something. I guess listening would be the answer. And we are heading into Chapter 12. And why is this happening to me again? And chapter 12 is holding a space of love. So this takes us halfway through the book. Let's see, we're just about the end of May. And it takes about a year to go through this. How cool is that? So if you're reading along with us, we're on page 71. If you do not have a copy of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, unfortunately, we can't sell you one, because it's out of print. However, you can go to eBay or Amazon and you'll find dozens and dozens and dozens of copies that are available. Used, some of them new, actually. Fortunately, back in the early part of the century, we spread several tens of thousands of books around, and there are enough available there that you can go pick one up. Or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can pick up a free copy of it on whyagain.org, digital. You can read it on your computer. You can print it out, whatever you'd like to do. And so we've been dealing with a chapter on processing and going unconscious, and Richard's asking lots of questions about that. Richard's a character in the book that I'm having a conversation with. And before we move into the next level of that conversation, we got to the point of recognizing that we needed to really talk about this idea of holding a space of love. So I'm going to just start on page 71 and invite you to join us to take a look at it. Richard has asked the question about love. Let's see, conscious, you know, I talked about conscious, active, present love, and he says, conscious, what? I can't even say it, let alone do it. What does it mean? So I suggest let's talk about that for a moment. So the best exercise I know, I'm offering this to Richard, to practice and strengthen your ability to hold space of love, just close your eyes and allow yourself to become quiet. With your awareness focused inside, think of what inspires you clearest, strongest and most powerful love you're capable of feeling. Now, that might mean just recall an experience. It might mean just get your mind to shut up, quiet your mind. The natural state of the human being is that of conscious, active, present love. Our culture has filled our minds with so much noise and so much distraction that most people, unless they consciously, purposely move into that space, don't ever experience it. And what we're looking to do is to invite people into, from a space of volition, taking charge of the flow and the direction of energy in their lives. Most people, it's just like kind of, well, whatever's programmed in, it flows, it happens. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, and that's the way it is. Our objective here is to become conscious creators of our lives, to choose energies we engage in. Or if we find ourselves unconsciously engaging in energy that we'd rather not be engaging in, then taking action to remove that energy from our structure. So that's kind of a short form explanation of what this work is about. And Richard asked the question, well, what if I feel nothing? In my workshops, Richard, I often ask the question, do you remember a time when you looked at the way people around you lived and asked yourself if things were supposed to work that way? The majority of people answer with a resounding yes. When I quiz people further, virtually everyone says they remember knowing that life was about love, about caring, about support. Each then recounts how they cut themselves off from love. So, do you remember when you knew life was about something other than the, who was it that wrote this loveless toil that we fill our days with? How many find your days filled with loveless toil and say, why am I doing this? Why am I engaging in this? And perhaps it seems like you have no choice, and the only reason it seems you have no choice is because your instrument, your body-mind unit, as we call it, has been structured for that, has been structured with that flow of energy. And so it seems to just go on by itself. And sometimes it takes some very dedicated action to change the direction of that flow and to restructure the direction that you're going. And so again, most everyone who remembers goes back to a time of wonderment when they knew that life was about love, and they wondered why people were doing hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, trauma. Why is that happening? And I offer the thought to Richard that each generation of children is seduced into giving up their experience of a world based on love. They exchange this for a world controlled through fear, anger, and manipulation. They're often taught that this trade-off is the only way to get things and be successful in the real world. It's an interesting project that we are carrying forward with in our taking care of our granddaughter, who's been circling the earth for about 30 months. And of course, there's a certain level of willfulness that's coming into her experience, things she wants, when she wants, when she wants it. And it's interesting to see her grasping, even at 30 months, that her life is goal-driven and that she can cancel the goal that she has and that there's a whole world there to play with. You know, I want this toy. And you can see the tendency to go into some sort of emotional tantrum or, you know, expression, which fortunately she rarely does. But, you know, there's the inclination there. And that's where we'll stop and we'll say, well, notice how you feel. Does that feel good? And she'll when she does it, she'll say yes. And then we'll say, so notice that it's because you want that. And we're saying that's not appropriate right now. And notice you've got a whole room full of toys and things that you enjoy playing with. And you could do that instead. But to do that, You have to let go of, you have to cancel the goal for that. And it's just been amazing to watch how she grasps that and is able to do it. Really quite amazing. And we're working toward doing that more than creating distractions. You know, there's a time period where, well, the structures in the head, the wants, the goals are kind of fragile, so you can distract them. But rather than just distraction, we do distraction sometimes. But more often now, we're talking about her recognizing that her upset is about her desire for something that isn't the way she wants it to be. And she's at 30 months understanding that she can cancel that and go back to happiness. I mean, it's really quite sweet, quite amazing. And, you know, so instead of seduction, which is what the culture does, well, we'll give you this. Well, if you'll be quiet, we'll give you that. We'll bribe you. We'll, you know, get you to play this game that most of the adult world does. We're looking at offering her a whole different approach. So each generation of children is seduced into giving up their experience of a world based on love. They exchange for this a world controlled through fear, anger, and manipulation. They are often taught that this trade-off is the only way to get things and be successful in the real world. The ancient Aramaic teachings warned us to be careful that we do not allow ourselves to be conformed to this world. And so we're looking to become conscious creators, consciously, purposely engaged in holding to the active presence of love, whatever's going on in our world. And that staying in conscious, active, present love is possible 24/7, 365. Now, if you say to me, well, Michael, have you mastered that yet? I still have to say no, I am not totally a master of that yet. But I'll tell you what, I'm a whole lot better at it than I was previously, than I have been in my life, and that I was trained to before I started to do my work. And to recognize that this flow of energy that we're brainwashed with is oftentimes nothing but a total con job. It's got nothing to do with the truth of who we are and what we're really here for. And so becoming conscious, allowing the mind to go still, and as you still the mind, to cause its seductive hostility and fear-based perceptions to be deleted, to be removed, and the deletion process, the delete key is called forgiveness. It is the way that you remove those energies based in hostility or fear. And so we're moving in the direction of that conversation, and in essence, that's the core of the work that we're doing. How do you remove every energetic pattern that you've been brainwashed with? And maybe you've been brainwashed by your genetics, maybe you've been brainwashed by your environment, maybe you've been brainwashed by somebody you cherish deeply or somebody you hate. There are lots of different ways of getting locked into energetic patterns. And you recognize that every energetic pattern that produces some form of hostility or fear is part of a brainwash. Are you willing to do what it takes to remove that brainwash, to step back in to the truth of who you are as love, and to experience whatever it is that's happening in the moment in the world as and out of the presence of love? So that's what we're here to understand, to incorporate, to master. And what happens as you do that is you're preparing a space for something else to occur. That something else can be such a wide variety of experiences that we're not particularly here to try to tell you what it should be. We're here to support you letting go of the past so that you can be in what is really truly here for you. And who knows? Maybe some of it isn't even describable as yet. Maybe we don't even have words for it yet. In fact, I think the best things that are yet to come, we don't have words for because they're not in common experience, and we only have words for what's in common experience. So we're here to engage in the tool of forgiveness, to teach, to learn how forgiveness operates, and return to the truth of who we are. Who are we? Well, if you've ever held a newborn child, you know exactly who you are. You are that pure presence of love, that pure presence of being. That's your design from the word go. And so we're here to support you in experiencing that as the total flow of your life. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you know, if you're listening to the show on a different station than through your phone, if you dial that 563-999-3581 number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that'll raise a hand and we'll be able to have a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? Miss Jeannie, it is now about 4:15. So we're 1/4 of the way through the show. We've got 3/4 of the way to carry on with conversations. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, on both of those. And I just have a question on when you say we only have words for what is in common experience. So if an event happens that we have never experienced ourselves or seen or whatever, then we don't have the words to describe it or even the ability to understand it, correct?
Correct. We can have the direct experience of it. And then what my experience has been is when something like that happens, it takes me some time to teach my mind to even think about it or talk about it. And, you know, there's some interesting, if you do some research, you'll see that they've documented how in the early days of explorers coming to the Americas, in particular in South America, there are explorers who had their tall ships, which they would anchor, you know, a couple of hundred yards offshore, and then they'd take small rowboats and row into, you know, this land that they had encountered. And when they started to communicate with the natives with astonishment would, you know, like, they were bewildered. Where did you come from? How did you get here? And the explorers would just point, you know, a couple hundred yards offshore, there's this tall ship. And the tall ships were so far out of the realm of experience for these natives that they could not see them. Obviously, if they could not see them, they did not have words for them. And so a new experience is taught and learned. And, you know, what we're understanding more and more is that the experiences that we're having are really symbols. You know, if, let's say, for instance, I was listening to a presenter and he had a really good example. He said, here I am, I've got my computer turned on, and there's this little blue square. And when I click on that little blue square, I can open my email. And when I look at the little blue square is a symbol of how to get to my email. It doesn't tell me anything about where the email is stored. You know, if I believe when I looked at that screen that said, well, my email is stored right down there in the lower corner of this glass screen, I would be laughed at because that's so foolish. It's so ridiculous. And so there's an interface there that has an icon that's just a symbol. You know, if you listen to the Course in Miracles, it talks about how we live by symbols. And then we have symbols of symbols called words. And what we're looking to do with this forgiveness work is to collapse the perceptual constructs behind the symbols that we call painful or traumatic, and by collapsing them, make a space for a different kind of experience. Does that fit and make sense with where you're going, sweetie?
Yeah, and while you were talking about that, I also thought of, besides the ships, which I had thought of that as well, was that Aria had to be taught edge definition.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, you know, according to psychology, if I remember correctly, about 90% of the energy of the brain is tied up in edge definition. And it was interesting, you know, we knew that in advance, and we have a little porch out front, and Aria, in the early stages of her life, when she started walking, would just walk from one end of the porch to the other and would just be ready to step off because her brain did not construct an edge with different heights. She had to build the brain cells for that. And so now, you know, she doesn't just walk off the edge of the porch. She knows there's an edge there. Her brain is able to reflect that accurately. But before she had the brain cells for that, she couldn't. She just, I mean, literally walk off the edge or just fall over. And, you know, something, of course, we had to be very careful with until she got edge definition. And, you know, the whole process is that of building brain cells and going beyond the symbols into deeper and deeper experiences of the actual energy of what's available to us. And when we live by symbols based in hostility or fear, we're living in symbols that are based in experience that is not an experience designed for human beings. And so we're looking to dissolve, to forgive the content of brain cells that holds any of that and make space for a different experience. But yeah, the edge definition was a good way to explain it, Jeannie. So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? We've got lots of time for conversation.
And that goes for...
Apologies.
I was just going to say it goes for learning these tools too, not just physical stuff, but mental stuff. It's like, you know, teaching people have been so ingrained in forgiving another person or forgiving themselves that when you talk about true forgiveness, that it's not letting someone off the hook, but going inside and removing what doesn't belong. Sometimes somebody has to hear that a gazillion times before it triggers. I mean, somebody could be in a 16-day intensive at Heartland and on the 16th day still turn around and say they forgive somebody. It's like getting that concept and you know, they may hear it and say they understand it, but then they forget it because the other has a stronger root, I guess.
Yeah, it's also interesting, and I mean, I've watched people who've done this work for 20 years who'll turn around, especially in a moment of stress, and talk about how they forgave someone, even though they've got the brain cells for it. That's not what forgiveness means. And it's always interesting how the mind then, or usually, makes up and says, oh, well, that's not what I meant. It's like, excuse me, I heard what you said. I listened carefully to your words. You said what you meant. Well, no, not really. What I really meant was, it's like, no, you don't speak out of brain cells that aren't firing. So when you said what you said, my invitation is just to look at what brain cells are behind what you're saying. And it can definitely create a space where a lot of stress comes up for people as they're stepping out of those old brain cells that forgiveness is about letting somebody else off the hook.
And we have a hand up.
Awesome. We'll say hello to our caller.
Area code 760. You're on the air.
Hey there. This is Ann in Florida.
Oh, hey, Ann. Welcome, young lady.
Hey, so on a follow on the comment there about the learning, the edge thing, because I remember that in child psychology class, the different stages of the child.
Right.
So isn't the learning, because I came across this the other day, it's as simple as if everybody that we're communicating with is on the same page, as in if I go to the mechanic and he says this, this, and this, and uses the words, describing what's going on with my car, only I have no clue because I don't understand those words. So I want to be educated.
You have no brain cells for those words.
Right. So show it to me. Show me the piece that you're talking about. But yet we don't see with our eyes, right? So don't
Correct.
I have to have that experience in somewhere in order to look at whatever he's showing me and connect it? Or is that the thing, right? That moment, is that the experience now it's going to get into my brain cells because he's putting a word to this object? How, am I making that too complicated?
Well, yeah, I think I've got it. Let's imagine that we're talking about a hose on an automobile.
Okay.
If I have never had any experience, if I've been brought up in a world that's devoid of any kind of mechanics, I've been brought up, let's say, in an artistic world, and that's been right. my experience, and this person talks about the hose from the car and takes it out of the car and puts it in front of me, I look at it, and if I still don't have brain cells, I'm not going to think hose, and I'm not going to understand that a hose is a piece of metal or a piece of rubber through which a
right.
fluid moves. Until I have the brain cells for that, he can hold that hose up till the cows come home. It's not going to mean anything to me. But once I've got the brain
right.
cells, I can go, oh, so that's the hose that creates the pressure or that controls the pressure switch in the transmission that shifts gears. Oh, okay, now I've got it. And I know now that, because I have the brain cells, there's a fluid, and varying amounts of pressure on the fluid create varying amounts of pressure on a switch, and it switches gears. Now that I have the brain cells, that all makes sense. But if I have no brain cells for that, it means nothing. And in the same way,
okay.
With the forgiveness process for the average person, to tell them after a lifetime where they've been taught that forgiveness is about I let you off the hook, I let you off the hook, I let you off the hook, to start to shift that into, no, it's time to stop forgiving people. Never forgive anyone ever again. And I like it when I watch people's response to me when I say that, and they'll say things like, well, but I thought your work was all about forgiveness. It's like, that's right. It's all about forgiveness. And forgiveness has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. It's about me going inside of myself and removing what's happening inside of me that I say is an experience I want to be finished with. And still, under stress, people's minds, people who've been around that for years, will still come forward with, I forgave them. Because those old brain cells are still hanging in, the conflicting brain cells.
Right, right. Yes, because it's been ingrained. Okay, so let me relate this. So say if the mechanic relates it to a garden hose, and I know I have the brain cells for a garden hose, right?
Right.
Because I've had that experience. So
yep.
now he explained to me the fluid is going through that only it's inside the car. But he takes me to the car and he shows me where that, because I'm still not getting it. And he
right.
shows me where that goes is. So then he's building even more. So in this process, in this forgiveness work, it's the same thing, right? Each thing
exactly.
that we do is building and giving us more, okay, and adding to
building the
our
brain cells.
Experience so that we get it. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Wait,
moving
so
out of
to,
the misbelief in the material world into the actual world.
Right, which goes back to, you've said it, Dr. Timsa, is to quit being so hard on ourselves because it takes more time when it's been ingrained.
Exactly.
And okay, awesome. That's just so much relief.
And if we're hard on ourselves, that's a reflection of a power person who's hard on us. If there's no patience for self, then probably we were brought up with a power person who had no patience for themselves or for me. And so now I get to forgive impatience and start to develop patience for self.
Right. So it's not until, like in my case, you get into college and you have a professor that says, you're so hard on yourself that you start to wake up. Well, how did I get that way? But I don't understand how I got that way till I get into work and have tools like this. So, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Right. So, so then we learn, I'm learning better not to be so concerned about the past, because this is what I'm doing right now in this moment, and go with what I'm doing now. And, you know, yeah, if I get triggered, okay, then I do the wake up or whatever tool I need to use. But staying here in the present is more important to add more understanding and add more examples and experiences and build more brain cells.
That's where we're going.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks.
All right.
Both of you.
Well, anything else on your mind, young lady?
No, not at the moment, but thank you. Blessings.
All right. We appreciate you. Lots of love. Blessings. I'm Miss Jeannie. We're about the halfway point, so we've still got 30 minutes for conversation. If you're out there in listener land, push one. Let's talk about it. How can we support you? What's your issue? What's happening? How can we work you through the forgiveness process? How can we explain any aspect of the tools? That's what we're here for. So if you're on the call, push one. Let's have a conversation.
It is all quiet. 563-999-3581 and press 1.
You can download the Why Is This Happening to Me Again forgiveness app by going to your app store and typing in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. When you do that, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And you can download it free, and you'll have it installed on your phone, and then you can actually do the step-by-step forgiveness process right there on your phone. And as you complete it, there's an option to print a PDF so you can save it as a print and go back and make use of it, review it. So please download the app, put it to work, and how can we support you? What's happening in your world?
Okay, Susan has pressed one again, so 610, you're on the air. Hey, lady.
Hey, hi, guys. I was hesitating because I've got to go on a walk and meet an arborist in a park, but I think I can talk in the meantime.
Great.
Let me start with the TV, the Netflix thing we've all known about, this Call the Midwife.
Call the Midwife,
Here are these people who are living in loving connection with one another. No matter who it is, the nuns and midwives look upon each person as worthy of attention and respect and love. And their general basic assumption is that these are good and honest people. And they live a very social life. There's a lot of activity, a lot of laughter and sharing and fun. And I was thinking, how great to live in that community. And then it hit me. I would be the weird one who wouldn't want all that interaction. I'd be the weird one who wanted time to herself, to be quiet. You know, I'm thinking, where would I fit in? And would my crabapple subpersonality come out? And I know there are some crabapples in there, but they end up being just such gems underneath. You know,
that's
like
what we
Nurse
think about
Green.
You too.
She's what?
I said, that's what we think about you, too.
Oh, that's nice. Well, the crabapple, I had a word from the Holy Spirit the other day because I have a very active, close to the surface, crabapple living in me. And I had a thought about somebody that I saw in the park that I didn't know. I see a lot of obesity in the park. We have a lot of the poor of the city come into the park to have picnics. And I must say, probably 70% of them are obese. And it isn't that they're heavy. It's that I know they're not eating well and they're not healthy. I know Yurate, thank God, she had this issue too. But so my instantaneous reaction is feeling critical. And then I go through feeling sorry because a lot of these are small children. When I was in school, when I was a kid, we had one boy that we called the fat kid. I feel so badly. I remember his name. He was the one kid who was heavy. And
right.
Everybody else was not. And he was an aberration. Now that's so common. You know, YouTube ballet dancers who are maybe 50 pounds overweight, getting up on toe and dancing beautifully, but they're so heavy, they look all wrong. And my inner crabapple is out there in spades, and I'm walking along, and I had the thought, bypass, do a bypass. See it, acknowledge it, and do a bypass, and go on from there. Now, I add that to a little clip I read in Richard Rohr's meditation the other day, which was by Viktor Frankl, who wrote about having been in the concentration camp and how a few of them there chose to be loving and inclusive and respectful, even though they were starving and cold and mistreated. And he said something like, I wish I had the phrase, it was good. He says something about ignoring irritability, which to me was like a delicious thing to read because it meant he acknowledged that he was irritable, but he did a bypass. And I guess what I want from you is for you to tell me that it's okay to have those showing up and we're not doomed, but a bypass is a good thing until we get better. So I know I'm looking to
well,
you
my take,
as an authority. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, my take is to recognize that whatever moves in us is moving in us. And if it's an untoward energy, we always have the option of deletion. And it's just a matter of practicing the skill of deletion. Mm-hmm. If I say I don't like this, I can, first of all, acknowledge it, accept it in myself, and then say, and now I'm going to do whatever work it takes to be free of it. And
mm-hmm.
I might do 1 or 2 or 10 or 20 or 50 or 77 times 70 worksheets to rid myself of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to do that. That's my next project. That's my next piece of work. And the recurring theme that I noticed with Miss Susan is that one that was being referred to earlier, being hard on yourself. And that the judgments you hold about Susan are pretty heavy duty. And I'd be the first one to stand in the space of supporting you and letting go of that, those judgments about self. And if you notice untoward energies, because judgment is kind of like the glue that's going to hold it in place. When you can let go of the judgment and just acknowledge, oh, yeah, I got this, I got this, I got that, and I can just gently, softly breathe and hold a space of love for myself, I can start to move through it rather than I've got to make it a big deal about something that's wrong with me. And I can only assume that you had a power person who probably fairly regularly told you what was wrong with you. And you don't have to be faithful to that behavior.
Hang on 1 second, Michael. I'm about to go outside. Tim Bingham? Oh, he's on the phone. Never mind. I'm good. Carry on. You know, that's good to hear. You used a word, and I've lost it already, but it was like one of those words, like a key that unlocks something. And it's true that worksheets, you know, it's amazing. Yurate, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this on here, say this, but she did a worksheet in our Zoom group ages ago about a similar issue, and she really worked right through it right there. Her own issues were a variation of mine, but similar, and she worked right through it and came out the other end. But I don't think I've done a single one on that issue. Like, what? Why not? You know? Okay, that's good. Good suggestion.
Might be time. Might be time to apply forgiveness towards the way you treat yourself and do that on a new level.
Oh, that, yes. Yeah, I was talking about the people who aren't eating well. And, you know, my son, too, he's a doctor, and he said, you know, what you see in the hospital, you have people coming in with problems, of course. They come in with problems, but you also are dealing with diabetes, obesity, ill health because of poor eating habits. And he said, this is so complicated. It goes on and on and on. I'm trying to treat a kidney problem, but there's so much else that we need a team of doctors in there coaching these people on good habits so they don't get into such bad trouble. So he has, even from a very practical point of view, he says, this is just really hard, really stressful. But he also has my judgmental. I told you we ran a ballet school. Everybody who wasn't stick thin was considered fat. And that was a hard one to come past. So anyway, yes.
So how about a mind shifter?
Okay.
It's easy and healing for me for me to see and hold each person in the perfection that they are.
Ooh, I like that. See and hold each person in the perfection that they are. You know, as soon as I talk to them, like coming into the park, we have discussions with people we've never met before. Hi, guys. I'm doing that right now. Hi. Yeah, you may patter. You want to patter? Sorry, I'm letting a man pat the dog. Yeah, as soon as we're talking, the issue goes away. It's a visual first impression that's powerful. And so you're right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Brownie white dog.
Okay, there's a man patting my dog.
What's his name?
Abby.
What's your name?
Susan. So you're getting a visit to my park, Michael and Jeannie. Hi, folks.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah. Come on, Abby.
And getting to walk the dog, too.
Yeah, well, the dog's coming with me. This is a great story. There's an apple tree on the edge of the park behind the fence owned by a family. And years ago, I asked the family if it was okay that I picked all the apples outside the fence because it was in park property. But there were many apples sitting on the ground inside the fence. And I said, you're not eating your apples. Do you know how good these are? And they said, oh, we don't eat apples. And I thought, is it okay if I come and pick them up? And they said, sure, be my guest. So for years, I would take bushel baskets to the refugee center, and we'd make applesauce. So it was coming out our ears.
Oh, nice.
the apples were called Arthur Turner. Evidently, they are a Pennsylvania apple. They're ugly as heck. Mm. They're green with brown spots. And you think they're just rotting. But they're not rotting. And they're sweet and firm. It's the best apple I've ever tasted. Well, about 3 years ago, the tree stopped producing. It would flower. It would have its leaves. But they were just these tiny, shriveled, dwarfed apples, just a few of them. And I thought, what is the matter with this tree? So after 3 years of watching and hoping, I called an arborist and I told him about the tree. And I said, you could just do a walk-by. Right. He said, well, you know, if it's on their property, I probably ought to go in there because I need to take a sample and do. So it turns out a new little family has moved in who would love the apples. And I spoke to the young man. He has a daughter and a fiance. And he said, I told him about the tree. And he said, oh, I would love to have apples on my property. And so I said, well, can I bring a friend who's an arborist in and see if we can make a diagnosis? And he said, oh, I'd love it. So we're about to have a rendezvous with the arborist and the man and the little girl who is 9 said, if you get these apples going, I will take responsibility for the tree. And I will water it and I will talk to it.
Sweet.
Isn't that cute? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's our little rendezvous, and it's at 2 o'clock, so I'm on my way down.
Oh, now. Cool. And what's the name of the apple?
Arthur Turner, named after the
Arthur
man.
Arthur Turner.
Yeah.
I just wrote it down.
We just planted about 6 apple trees on our property here. So interesting conversation. We'll have to look into that. We just planted a black Arkansas the other day, or Jeannie did actually. And we had planted a Jonathan, and it died before it even got started. And we've got what are the other ones?
A Sun Crisp and a
couple
Macintosh.
Of fig trees.
Good for you. Good for you. I haven't seen Macintosh apples in ages. I'm glad to hear they still exist. You see Gala. Go ahead.
The Arbor Day is one of the places where we order our trees and things. They're big about planting trees all around the world. But then some of the last ones I got, the Macintosh I got from a company called TYTY Georgia.
Wow. So they still exist? How cool. Well, good. You mean on your property where your father lives, Jeannie?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. What a legacy to leave for people and to have for yourself. Are they saplings? Are they partly up already?
They're probprobably about 3.5-4 feet tall. And they just have little tiny twigs of leaves sticking out of them. So they won't produce till next year.
Wow. Well, if you don't find Arthur Turner apples, and if we get some eventually, I will send you some seeds.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Cool. Well, we'll hold the space that you are able to diagnose this tree successfully and help it to get back to life. One of the things we learned is that there are certain trees that need to be fertilized by certain other types of trees, and maybe Arthur lost its mate, and you might look around and see if there's another apple tree that's been cut down or something, and that might be why it's not the apples aren't being fertilized and growing, and it might need a companion.
Wow. It might.
And they're usually a different tree. Like an Arthur Turner probably needs some other, tree, not another Arthur Turner.
Really weird.
Yeah, there's very few of them that will pollinate with themselves. They need a different kind of apple tree.
And yet they produce their own kind.
Right.
They don't. Oh, that's so interesting.
Like the Macintosh needs something like a black Arkansas in order to reproduce Macintosh apples.
Wow.
And the Arkansas Black has to have two different kinds of trees, not just one.
Wow. Wow, that's complicated. Mother Nature is very interesting. I thought it was bees and the fact that our bees have diminished in populations that might have affected it. Who knows? Anyway, the guy.
Well, of course, the bees are needed
to
carry the. Yeah, the bees. I don't know specifically, but the bees are needed to carry the pollen. But the tree has to be within a certain distance. They say to begin with to reproduce reliably. You know, it's like 15 mm-hmm. or 20 feet away. That tree needs to be there. So
yeah.
I don't know whether it's pollinated just through wind in the air or whether it has to be a bee. But they say there has to be a certain distance, and if they're too far away, they won't pollinate each other.
Well,
so it was just an interesting
wow.
process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for the conference.
All right, young lady, hold you in a blessing. And let us know
you
the
too.
Outcome of what you learned about the tree.
I will.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Lots of love.
Bye. Yep, you too. Bye.
All right. All right, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 10 minutes left, 8 minutes.
We actually have 8.
Do we have anybody else out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
We had one up, but it's disappeared even off of the switchboard itself. So if somebody else has a question, we've got 8 minutes. We can tackle another one. Let's go for it.
Our call-in number, 563-999-3581. How can we support you? What's on your mind? And if we're complete with questions, go ahead.
While we're waiting to see if someone else puts a hand up, just because we left yesterday's show with me in tears getting ready to go breathe and process, kind of goes along with the same thing we were talking about at the beginning about having brain cells. So
yes.
I had not had an experience in the past of being helpless and hopeless and at loss. Or being perfect, I think, is one of the things you came up with yesterday while I was breathing, needing to handle everything just perfectly. If I hadn't had those experiences in the past, then when I ran into this issue around Dad, then I would have just been, well, okay, we've got, you know, this that we need to look at or that we need to do, and there would have been zero emotion around it, correct?
That would be it. And it was actually a little more than that, sweetie. It was actually just the fact that you have to handle everything. It's a construct, I think, that you live within, and that as you let go of that one, then you're going to see yourself freed of a lot of stressful burden.
That resonates.
Yeah, I breathe with you. And, of course, just being with Dad and giving him permission to do what he needs to do is a major, major space to hold.
I think another thing that gets triggered, and I know it's totally me, that, you know, whatever Dad does, it's not out of any kind of, volition or
malice
or intent. Yeah, he just
yep.
does. But I think part of it has to do with not being listened to, because it feels like, you know, when I tell him something, you know, and then I have to repeat it 5 minutes later. And I know that's, you know, nothing that he can control or handle, because it's just his memory is gone. But yet the event itself triggers not being listened to or having to, you know, repeat myself and I don't know, something in that is just under the surface too.
Well, we'll hold the space for whatever that's about to surface and let loose.
Yeah.
And to recognize that it's okay to let other people be responsible as well. But you don't have to handle and be responsible for everything for everybody.
Yeah. Susan, I'm in your ballpark on that one, because we're always trying to fix everybody and fix everything for everybody so they don't have to face the consequences of it. But 'tis true.
Letting go. So I'm agreeing with you, sweetie.
4 minutes.
And if nobody else has a question, we can just gently say thank you, everybody, for joining us and close the show out. Have the best year yet of your eternal life and be blessed. Appreciate you joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mindshifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.